Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Monday. Thanks for being with us. A lot going on. We are going to start looking at the NFL draft a little bit on this show today in a segment. Charles Davis, NFL on Fox analyst, NFL Network draft analyst, he'll be with us. I will be in Indianapolis next week as part of our Combine coverage. We go to the NFL Combine every year here at sports360az.com. Paula Bovin will join us. Our Monday conversation news and notes with AZ Central columnist Paula Bovin. I saw where she was at the Arizona State-USC game on Friday night. She chose the better game to attend. For some reason, Eric and I decided to go last night. I went separate from him. He actually went there to work, of all things. I saw him walking up to his seat like, what are you doing here? These are two programs that are rebuilding, or in Arizona State's case, yeah, they're rebuilding, but they've got they're down to the slab here pretty much, other than Trey Holder. I like what Trey Holder's all about. So Paula Bovin here in about 15, 20 minutes, and then Charles Davis at the bottom of the hour. This was the weekend that the NBA All-Star Game, it's a lot of fun for fans. I get it. The best of the All-Star Games to me, just for me personally, I would rank them in order of baseball 1, NBA 2, NHL 3, MLS 4, cricket 5, tennis 6, 7 would be bowling, 8 would be, give me another sport, equestrian, 9 would be anything other than the Pro Bowl. That's the worst of the worst of the worst when it comes to the All-Star games. I liked last night. It was fine. And it had the Kobe Bryant factor that went along with it. It's Kobe's final game. I hope that next month when the Lakers come to town for their final time with Kobe Bryant, that the arena is packed, that there is a loud, rowdy, raucous ovation, that Kobe even bothers to show up at Phoenix. Because, look, through the years, you may have watched last night's All-Star game, and he scored just 10 points, and there was a lot of emotion around there with Kobe. But through the years, Kobe Bryant has given Suns fans a lot to love. You've had somebody to boo. You've had a villain to go watch. The Lakers, the Suns, back and forth. Without Kobe Bryant on the floor, it's a boring deal. Okay? Shaq didn't bring near the animosity when he was with the Lakers. He just didn't. But when you have Kobe Bryant out on the floor and Ron Artest or Meta World Peace out on the floor, how do you not, Dennis Rodman, how do you not love that? That was great. It was terrific. There was a dinner Saturday night, early Sunday morning, that was put together for Kobe Bryant. The Associated Press was given access to this, with Carmelo Anthony, Chris Paul, Dwayne Wade. They all gave Kobe Bryant gifts. It was a secret, super exclusive, invite only, something those four started doing last year. So think about this. Kobe, Carmelo, Chris Paul, Dwayne Wade last year said, hey, why don't the four of us do something every year at the All-Star Game? We'll call it the Gathering of the Gentlemen's Supper Club. The Gentlemen's Supper Club. So they had to have a top secret invite to go to this. The group wanted Bryant to be tied into it somehow. So after All-Star Saturday night ended, they went out to the party that mattered most to them. They went to dinner, which was fish. It wasn't served until after 2 a.m. The wine and the spirits were flowing long before that and for a little while afterwards as well. Kobe Bryant said to the Associated Press at the restaurant, glass in hand, this is amazing. I'm not the most social person. So to get this from you guys means absolutely everything to me. So they gave him gifts too. Imagine this. You're at this dinner. In Toronto, you're having fish and wine. I don't know if you're blitzed out of your mind, but you're just hanging out. Dwayne Wade pulls out a box and gives him a customized robe and some other clothes bearing his logo, along with a one-year subscription to Netflix, because Bryant is about to have a lot of time on his hands. That's pretty good. Chris Paul gave him a bunch of presents that he'd said would properly prepare Bryant for retirement, such as dental adhesive, reading glasses, compression socks, and a cane. That's very funny. Carmelo Anthony offered a Magnum Italian wine for a player who grew up in Italy and says, much like vino itself, he got better with age. Bryant said it was very special. And the Netflix subscription, I hope somebody filmed it for the inevitable documentary about Bryant's final season, which, yeah, that would be really interesting. Eric was telling me last night he was caught up in the Christian Laettner, I Hate Christian Laettner, 30 for 30. So it got me thinking here about this Kobe Bryant deal. If somebody was there documenting it, and evidently with the AP there on hand, to sit there at a table and have Dwayne Wade pull out a box or Chris Paul, here's some dental adhesive and a cane, how would you not like that? So it was really interesting. Zach LaVine went out and did his stuff. We've got some video of that that we'll show a little bit later on. But I want to advance the story from there. This is going to be a really interesting week for the Phoenix Suns, because the trade deadline is this week, and it's already out there now that Houston is shopping Dwight Howard. It's already out there now that Ricky Rubio is being shopped around by Minnesota. There should be some sort of discipline, I would think, announced against Markieff Morris this week. I would think. They didn't do anything last week because under NBA rules, you're not allowed to interfere with the All-Star game. Well, now that's behind us. So something should come up today, unless it's just, oh, well, that's no big deal. Okay. The trade deadline is Thursday. And for me, I'd keep Devin Booker, and that's probably about it. TJ Warren's a nice player who's hurt, but none of these guys that you look at on the roster, you say to yourself, man, oh, man, this is the building block we have to keep. We are going to say you are untradeable. The only guy that's untradeable is the youngest guy on the team. That's it. The best story over the weekend, though, what I love most about sports, what I love most about doing this every day, why I'm so passionate about doing this every day, is that you never know what's going to happen out there. You don't know what the unpredictable story that is that's going to come along. So yesterday, I didn't find myself at all over the weekend watching much of Pebble Beach. Maybe Thursday night late on the replay on Golf Channel. I love watching the actors that can't play dead. I like seeing Clint Eastwood swing a golf club. I like watching Ray Romano swing a golf club. I like watching Larry Fitzgerald swing a golf club and hit a fan. I like seeing all this stuff. I like seeing them out of their element. But I really like it when a guy like Von Taylor comes along. I said to Eric this morning, did you see Von Taylor? Well, no, who's he? Yesterday, I was even telling my wife, I was like, hey, you got to come here and watch this. This is great stuff. So Von Taylor a week ago, this guy's on the PGA Tour, okay? There he is. Von Taylor a week ago was playing in his second straight web.com tour event in Bogota, Colombia. A week ago. He was stricken by a stomach virus so severe he needed nourishment from an IV, and he ended up withdrawing just after a handful of holes in Bogota, Colombia. Last weekend, he flew to California on Saturday rather than return to his home in Georgia because the flight was cheaper. Of course it is. He had taken his small golf bag with him to avoid the baggage fees that kick in after you exceed the 50-pound limit. So he goes to Pebble Beach, a spot for him that was not even guaranteed. A guy had to withdraw. Okay, so the guy withdraws. This guy's there hanging out. So, of course, by the end of the weekend, Von Taylor is sitting there with a 6-stroke deficit to Phil Mickelson yesterday, and he rallies past Phil Mickelson. The guy that didn't have the money to pay for his real bag, the guy that was in Bogota sick, the guy that is standing there waiting and watching Phil Mickelson yank a 5-foot putt on 18 yesterday. It'd been 126 months since Von Taylor won his last tournament. That's 11 years, guys. 11 years. So you got to imagine, here's a guy in Bogota, Colombia, who's puking or whatever, his insides out. A week ago, he's like, oh, I should go to Pebble Beach. I might be able to get in. He's chasing his dream. He's got a wife with like a 2-year-old when he won yesterday. 126 months since Von Taylor last won a tournament. There have been 182 different players who have won since then. So every week this guy shows up and grinds and loses and grinds and loses and grinds and loses. And he's standing there waiting to see Phil Mickelson to see what Phil could do. Phil misses the putt, and Von Taylor wins $1.26 million yesterday afternoon. Now, how do you not cheer for that? And that is what makes sports so great. That's the best story of the day. If I could sit here and do Peyton Manning and something that happened to him at Tennessee, I'm not excusing it. I'm not going to sit here and lead with that today. I got Von Taylor going. And Von Taylor's not going to move the needle as much for some of you, but that's what makes sports so great. And sometimes we just don't take the time to celebrate stuff like that. You don't know who he is. He could drop dead in front of you. You wouldn't know. You'd step right over him. And the other side of that story is Phil Mickelson this year, at 45 years of age, has three top 12 finishes already this season. That's as many as he had all of last year. I love that story. The combine is next week. Last night's ASU game was supposed to feature one of the top storylines, I think, that could happen in college basketball for Arizona State in many, many years. Even a bigger name than James Harden. And the guy wasn't there last night. It was just because he went to another tournament to play in. So I've got some recruiting news on that front to get to. And much, much more. The Coyotes host the Canadiens tonight here in town. That's what's on my mind. On the other side, Paula Bova, news and notes. AZ Central sports columnist, that's next. Then Charles Davis.
Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories. It's time for News and Notes with AZ Central sports columnist, Paula Bova. Here again, Brad Sesmat.
My friend Paula Bova, the professor. She is joining us here for a couple of minutes, columnist, AZ Central Sports as well. How are you?
Oh, you were cutting out, Brad. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine. We're not going to start the segment out like this, are we? Are we going to be bouncing all over the place? Come on.
No, I think we're good. I'm just not going to move like an inch.
Yeah,
I'm just going to stand
thank
here.
You. You chose the right ASU game to be at. We'll start there with basketball. And yeah. You went Friday night. And the game last night, Eric and I went to, and I needed somebody to gouge my eyes out by about the, middle of the first half, because it was just slow and hard to watch. But let's just go straight forward on Bobby Hurley and the progress or lack thereof. What are you seeing on Hurley's front with that program?
You know, I came across, and I know they won the game I went to Friday, but I just think things are really positive for a couple reasons. I like Hurley as a coach. I don't think people appreciate the talent deficiency he has. I mean, when I was even looking at the players on SC, there's some superstar freshmen on that team.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's coaching guys up. So I think he's a terrific coach, one, who's going to get better. Two, the atmosphere is improving in that arena. I know it's not filling up, but the student section, curtain of distraction, has added a lot to that. I think if they start winning and if they start, you know, obviously recruiting, and make some changes with that facility, I sort of feel like for once they've got some direction with this program. I've been fooled before by ASU basketball, but I came away positive, which probably was not how you came away.
No. I'm right there with you. I like the direction they're going. Thon Maker was supposed to visit Friday, and then he did not. He's at Basketball Without Borders. Ron Merritt, right. The assistant coach, was not there, which is the key to getting Thon Maker. And for those of you who don't know the name Thon Maker, he is probably, Paula, what would we say, the highest impact guy since James Harden, if they get him?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He'd be a one and done if he comes. And my understanding is if he goes to college, he'll go to ASU. I think that's, he just wants to go to a place he's comfortable. There is some, I think, question about just from where he's sort of come from, his transcript, not that he is academically it's an issue, because it's not, but there's, when you transfer around, when you come from other places, it's not as easy sometimes to make things work. So, but my understanding is they still feel pretty positive about it.
Okay, the facility issue that you bring up. So yeah. Are we both on the same page that we're going to hear some news here in the next few weeks? I think we're going to hear news on a whole bunch of stuff in the next few weeks involving all the teams here in town. Other than the Cardinals, I think everybody, even the Diamondbacks, there's going to be a shift of where we're going to play our games by 2020, even with the Diamondbacks,
right,
in my view. And
right.
So if we're talking ASU, are you of the opinion they are with the Coyotes, hell or high water?
Wait, as far as the new facility? Or?
Yes.
I haven't gotten enough of that feeling, Brad. You probably know more than I do. So no, I don't have that feeling, but maybe I haven't been talking to the right people. I know they've got to do something. They either need to you know, make that facility smaller and upgrade it, or they've got to, you know, come to some kind of terms with someone and make something better.
So we like the direction they're going. They just don't have enough size. Last night they got pushed all over the court. Let's move over then to what's going to happen this week. This is going to be a heavy Suns week, I think. So my understanding is, and correct me on this if I'm wrong, they couldn't do anything to Markieff because of the All-Star game. They didn't want to have any announcements. It's like a blockout period. So that's what I had heard, and this is the week where stuff is going to happen if there's some discipline towards Markieff. Are you hearing the same thing?
Yeah, I've heard the same thing. You know, a lot of fronts. Just we'll hear about discipline. We'll hear about maybe his future a little bit, if we're going to get a better feeling, if they feel like they can, if they're going to be able to deal him, or if there's enough interest based on what's happened with him lately. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I kind of feel like this is a big news week in a lot of ways.
Because the names that are out there, so Dwight Howard's name is thrown out there by Houston. I myself wouldn't want Dwight Howard here, but I'm not Robert Sarver. Same guy that brought Shaq here. Ricky Rubio's name is out there. That's a nice player. They keep going through this revolving rotation of guards. I don't see where that makes any sense. I would trade everybody on this team. Bledsoe, I'd trade everybody other than Booker. There's no untouchables on this team. There's nobody untouchable. You can't. There's nice players, Paula, but you can't tell me that they've got a nucleus here with any of these guys. That's me. What about you?
No, I mean, definitely Booker, but I would support keeping Bledsoe and even Knight. If the, you know, maybe they're not the perfect backcourt, but, you know, if you're going to build with young talent and those guys still fit in that category, I'm fine if you're complementing them with another couple good draft picks and maybe a couple other veterans. You know, Bledsoe's a really good player, and, you know, people forget about him a little bit because of the injury and everything else, and he's not the most dynamic guy as far as his personality, but he's one guy I wouldn't get rid of if you can make it work. But they've got a lot of work to do, and I think people and fans just have to commit to the fact that they're rebuilding. They're going to be, you know, not that good maybe for another year or two. They're going to keep it young, but goodness, if they get a good draft pick with this upcoming draft and they do it right, there's reasons to be excited about this team. It may just take 5 years, Brad.
If they do it right,
which is key.
And in Bledsoe's case, I'm on the side of three knee surgeries. And if Aaron Nelson and his staff look at him, we had Amin on last week, Amin El-Hassan, and he brought up a great point. He said, so when, and Amin was in their front office, when Amari was wanting his extension, it was pretty straightforward from the training staff and the doctors, no, don't give it to him. Mm-hmm. He's going to break down. And Fortunately, they listened, and no, they didn't give it to him. And what happened? He broke down. Now, there was a lot of public angst over it, but I'd be in that same boat with Bledsoe. It's three knee surgeries. I don't care how small they are. It's always small when it's not your knee being operated on. It's always small when they say, oh, yeah, it's minor. Sure, it's minor to you, but to me, it's a little bit more than minor. So that's why I'd be in the mindset of, I got a big contract. I got a guy that's been cut on three times. If I've got to part with something, I'd be open to that. He's a good player. I'm not disputing you on that. But from a pure business standpoint, the numbers they have tied up in him are a little bit scary. That's all I'm saying on that.
The numbers are big, but the problem is then what do you do? You know, it's not like the really, really talented point guards are just all over and available and free for the taking. You know, you've got to measure it with what direction you go. And if you feel like you beat what you have and you have a good deal and get somebody young in the position and blah, 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 fine. But I just always feel like, not you, but fans are so willing, let's deal this guy, not let's deal that guy, and not sort of realizing what are the other options, you know? I think that's what you got to weave into the conversation.
If they stand pat this week, I really am just going to bang my head against the wall. I've already started doing that, and it's starting to show all the bruises and bumps on my head. But come on. And unless that's, we know this team is just bad enough. I'm to the point now, when they lose, it's a win. When they lose a game, I come on the air and say they won again last night. And when they win, I'll say they lost. But fortunately, they haven't won many games lately. So I think they're doing the right thing here.
They are. And I think, I finally think fans get it in town. I think it's been hard for them to buy into the, you know, rebuild mode. It's this instant gratification society where they don't understand why you can't turn around in a year or whatever. They've felt how bad and seen for years how bad this team can be. So I think fans have sort of bought into that too, Brad, that they're willing to just, you know, look to the future and they're okay with that. But you're right. If they stand pat, I think there'll be a lot of headbanging going on, and not just yours.
If they don't do anything with Markieff, and I'm not even saying trade him because he may be untradeable, but if there's no sort of discipline, come on. Come on. Come on.
Yeah, there's got to be discipline. There's got to be. And I think he's tradable. I think people, there's always that team that thinks they can fix it. Right.
Sure.
So I think he's tradable.
So let's we know that it's going to be a busy Suns week. It's going to be a busy spring training week, obviously, with spring training getting started this week. And there's a lot of optimism around the Diamondbacks. Is the Greinke story your most interesting one? Is it Goldschmidt becoming the face of Major League Baseball that nobody knows about in Arizona? What's a couple things you're looking at for spring training around the Diamondbacks?
Definitely Greinke. I mean, it's been a while since, and we'll never paid somebody that much money, but had someone of that caliber in the rotation in so long. So I think that's such a great storyline. But also some of the changes that's happened, you know, Tomas, who is that guy? Who is he going to, be the guy we saw, you know, some big moments, or the guy that struggled in the second half of the season and with, you know, the whole NCR day and where that it went, and can Tomas be the guy? I don't know. You know, I think it'll benefit him not to have to go back and forth between positions. So That's interesting to me. Also, the infield is interesting. I'm not exactly sure what they're going to get. I think that's one of the questions that are going to be some of the questions answered in spring training. So I think you're going to look at that. And I'm excited that the move, and I think that was only recently when they signed Clifford, right? I think that's an interesting move as far as their need in the bullpen and things like that if some guys fail. So, yeah, I think there's a ton of storylines, but this is the first time in quite a while that I've really been excited about T-back spring training as a writer. You know, I think it's just there's so many questions and a lot of good possibilities, which hasn't been the case. So,
talking with Paula Bovin, a quick antidote for you. So on the Tomas front, I go to the sponsor event that they had. They do these awards every year for all their advertisers out at Wild Horse Pass, and Derek Hall emcees it. Derek Hall gets up on stage, and he said, we have a new sponsor for Yasmani Tomas. Yasmani, meet Jenny Craig. And the place gets a very good laugh, right?
Right.
So here is the president of the organization basically calling out his right fielder for his weight. So I want to see what Tomas looks like.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting.
That's pretty funny that but Derek has been known to do that from what I understand. So that was a pretty good line.
Yeah, no, that was a good one. Before we get out of here, so this is the week. I can't believe we're already into spring football with U of A. Todd loses another assistant coach, a running back coach that leaves today. I don't know what's going on with coaches coming and going, and why is it such a circular motion. I think part of it was the perfect storm of Norvell and some guys going on to be coordinators. I get that. But 2 weeks after letter of intent day, or a week after letter of intent day, week and a half, whatever, and you lose your running back coach? Come on. What's going on there, Paula?
Yeah, that's, the other ones, as you mentioned about with Norvell, I thought, that's going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
But this one was a little surprising to me, and you know, we've talked about it before. We all know Todd is a difficult guy to work for, but it has been, you know, for us he's been great, but for people on his staff he demands a lot, and that's part of the reason he's had success in his past. But you wonder if that has anything to do with it, or, you know, what else is going on. I haven't heard anything from why this guy just left, but the timing of it is bizarre, and I understand why fans are concerned. That's quite a bit of a turnover, and there's a lot of turnover going on in college football in the offseason this year with assistants. I'll tell you that. I've been reading a lot of stories, but it does seem like quite a few, and you don't usually have that much turnover when people are happy. So,
all right. I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time and insight as always. Thanks.
All right, Brad.
It's Paula Bovin, AZ Central sports columnist, the professor, my friend. Charles Davis joins us next. We'll be at the Combine next week in Indianapolis. He will, too, with the NFL Network. NFL on Fox analyst, that's next. I'm Brad Sismat. I'll be at the Combine next week. It's our fourth year going to the Combine with Sports 360. We'll be doing the TV show from back there as well. It will be a hectic time, as always, with the Cardinals and all the national guys that jump on board with us as well. March 9th is the start of the NFL calendar for players that can officially sign with new teams. The draft this year is April 28th. We're already getting flooded with draft stuff. I'm not going to bang you over the head every day with mocks. I mean, it's a lot of fun, but there's guys much smarter than me that are able to fill in the blanks on this and analyze players and learn as we go. Charles Davis is with us now, NFL on Fox analyst, NFL Network draft analyst. He will be at Indianapolis next week for the Combine. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Another day, Charles. Another week, another Combine next week. If I threw at you today the number one overall pick in the draft this year, would it be a tackle up from Ole Miss, a quarterback from Memphis, or somebody else?
Well, I would say a tackle from Ole Miss is a possibility. A quarterback from Memphis State is not a possibility. If anyone does that, that would be shocking to me, absolutely shocking, that he would go ahead of a couple of other quarterbacks. But I think it's going to depend, frankly, on who ultimately ends up with the number one pick, because Tennessee has it now. But because they have their quarterback, they're not in a quarterback market, but plenty of teams are, as you well know. So guess what? They're holding the golden ticket. If you really want a quarterback that badly, and with Cleveland sitting at two, that looks to be extremely quarterback needy.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? Tennessee might be in a pretty good spot. Now teams have to decide if they think that these quarterbacks are worth going all the way up to number one to get. And Tennessee's kind of counting on it. So they are truly open for business. So that's why the tackle from Ole Miss, which would be Laremy Tunsil, would be in play, because Tennessee's got to protect this young quarterback. You know, it has been made abundantly clear from management on down, which is one of the reasons Ken Whisenhunt lost his job, was that quarterback was getting hit too much.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to figure out what you're going to do. And you know they've got Taylor Lewan already, a young left tackle. Do they want to switch him over to right tackle? Do they want to keep him at left? Where does Tunsil fit in? Because he's clearly the best tackle in the draft, but I think he's a true left tackle. So I think it would provide great discussion among which I think it already has happened with John Robinson, the new GM, his crew at Tennessee. Okay, if we end up with this pick, our number one job is probably to protect this young man. Is Tunsil our guy? You know, I think that's where it starts for Tennessee. But for others, yeah, you know, if you want to make a deal, now you're talking about moving all the way up, because you may have to get past Cleveland to get the quarterback you want, if Cleveland indeed decides to pull the trigger on one of the top guys, who I believe right now are Jared Goff from Cal and Carson Wentz from North Dakota State. I'm not sure the other two quarterbacks were in that discussion for the number two pick in the draft.
Yeah, it's that period of time, Charles, where agents are doing their best job. And in Paxton Lynch's case, he has Lee Steinberg representing him, where let's stir up interest and let's see if we can get guys' names up there. So that's got to be a whole part of this process. Is there a position you look at in this year's draft? I know it's early, but you've done your homework. You always do. That you look at and say, wow, Brad, this is the year of the tackle, or this is the year of the lineman, or this is the year of the receiver. What is this the year of in this draft?
I think it's the year of the big people, defensive linemen especially, tackles and ends, but probably more so in the tackle position. You can sit here and say, I would guess that there are a great number of defensive tackles that teams have first-round grades on, maybe even more so than normal. I mean, we could go on. That could probably be a show in and of itself, to be frank with you. And in no particular order, I'm just going to name guys that just immediately come to mind for me. Sheldon Day, Notre Dame. Vernon Butler, Louisiana Tech. Jaron Reed, Alabama. A'shaun Robinson, mm-hmm. Alabama. Let's see who else. Sheldon Rankins, Louisville. Austin Johnson, Penn State. Andrew Billings, Baylor. See where I'm going?
Joey Bosa.
I mean, this is Joey. Well, to a Bosa, I count as an end.
Yeah.
As a true defensive end as opposed to a tackle. Yeah, I hadn't even gotten to the end yet. Bosa from Ohio State. Noah Spence, formerly of Ohio State, now Eastern Kentucky. You know, Carl Nassib has played his way into consideration, you know, after being a walk-on at Penn State, a one-year starter, had an incredible year. Shaq Lawson from Clemson. His running mate at Clemson, why is his name escaping me? So Kevin Dodd at Clemson. I mean, there's some talented defensive linemen running around out there. And at the Senior Bowl, we have some talented offensive linemen that struggled every day with the defensive fronts. I mean, it was that much that they were dealing with. And all the guys that I mentioned were not there. I mean, a decent number that I mentioned were, but not all of them. I mean, it was just a struggle every day with what they were dealing with up front.
Charles Davis with us, NFL on Fox, NFL Network. He will be at the draft. We will be there as well next week at Indianapolis, the combine, I should say. The draft, of course, is at the end of April. Is there a position that if you are in the market for a X, you better get him early because there just aren't many X's in this year's draft?
You know, it's really strange. With as much as we throw the ball, I'm not sure how many great receivers there are, if any. And when I say if any, I'm talking about I don't think there's a Sammy Watkins in this draft as a receiver. I don't think that there's a Kevin White in this draft as a receiver. I think I've already had some discussions with some guys, and we're not even at the fighting stage yet. But it's interesting to hear guys who, you know, as you posited earlier, guys smarter than me talking about receivers. And like a Laquon Treadwell from Mississippi, who is a very prominent player. Of course, a tremendous story coming back from the broken leg from the year before. You will have a major league discussion where some will say, yes, I think he's a first rounder. Others will say, I think he's a second rounder. And I'm worried about him being able to separate from people. So Corey Coleman, who just set record after record at Baylor, do you like him? Do you not? I mean, that's another fight over the whole thing. Well, he runs three routes. Will I be able to teach him to run the full route tree? You would think the answer is yes. But you also have a number of guys that come out of these offenses. Some guys just don't ever adapt. And you've seen them, Brad, where guys have come out and they've never really quite get the route running part of it down. So that's a discussion about whether you're going to be able to teach that guy those things that you're looking for, because athletically he's gifted as heck. But I don't see any of them going, you know, right now as we sit here, you know, last year we had those receivers that we were fighting about going in the top five in the draft, right? I'm not sure we're having that discussion.
Well, and Charles, to your point, you know, the Cardinals out here found J.J. Nelson, and he was terrific for them last year as a complimentary guy. And you look at John Brown earlier that Steve Kime was able to find.
Third round guy.
Yep. And half of the Super Bowl roster wasn't even drafted from what I'd read. So it's really becoming now more of a science for guys like us that have seen it through the years, where the combine used to be the end all of end alls. And I'm not diminishing it because it's great for fans. No. It's great for kids. But it's now more important than ever to turn over the rocks that aren't even in Indianapolis, because you're going to find guys. And maybe that's what you're meaning by the wide receiving core, that you've just got to find that guy later on in the draft, because the top of the draft doesn't have anybody or very few people.
Yeah, and that's the way it looks, and we find it all the time. You know, you've mentioned a couple just with the Cardinals and turned them into those types of players. But a lot of it is, do you have a coaching staff that will develop these kids?
Right.
You know, obviously the kid has to supply the work ethic and the want to do it. We know that. But if you have those kids that want to, do you have coaching staffs that can develop them? The Cardinals do. Not all guys. I know it sounds really weird, right? But some places just don't develop them as well. Why? I can't begin to tell you why. Some of it is, what kind of base did they come out of college with? You know, did they come out with a base of a work ethic and understanding things? Or are things gotten in a quote so simplistic for them offensively that now everything you throw them is brand new? And you hear every year scouts will say, God almighty, I throw what we call basic stuff up and they look at me blank. Other scouts will come back and go, shocked me how much football he actually knew from watching what he did on offense. You know, I think, frankly, let's use Marcus Mariota as a case study from last year. I think it stunned a ton of people how much football he already had in his quiver when they put him up on the board and talk, because his offense didn't suggest that, right? The style of offense. So Scott Frost, his offensive coordinator, started to be looked upon in almost a new light. We're like, oh my God, if Mariota knew all this, you're teaching more there than we thought. Well, Scott Frost is now a head coach in college football. He got a job this year. He's now a head coach at University of Central Florida, UCF. So I think, I'm not saying that's the, you know, A plus B equals C. Okay, I'm not saying that.
Right.
But it sure didn't hurt, because a lot of people are willing to dismiss a lot of these college offenses. Maybe they're not learning things. But when some of these kids come out and show you that they know more football than you thought, I think that's a plus for that college program.
Got about a minute and a half. Scooby Wright, Christian Westerman. If we're talking about Arizona State players in this year's draft, are those the two names you're hearing the most about?
Hearing a whole bunch about them, no doubt about it. I mean, Scooby's not going to wow you. in so many different ways, unless you just sit there and keep watching the tape. Which is what do we say every year, Brad? What do we, when you talk with scouts and player personnel? Well, the tape tells us everything, and then you find, then you watch people ignore the tape. Well, the tape tells me Scooby Wright's a player. Christian Westerman, if I have to go down that dark alley, I want to go with him.
Mm.
I do want to go with him because I watched him that week in Mobile, and my man will battle you now. There ain't no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So anyone wants to talk about West Coast and, you know, maybe it's a little softer football, well, they haven't watched this kid go because he'll have his dukes up ready to go at any moment. So I liked him. I liked him coming out. But those are definitely two of the bigger names you'll get coming out of those programs, if not the two biggest, probably the two.
I appreciate your time as always. We'll see you next week at the Combine. Thanks, Charles.
I look forward to you travel safely there, okay?
You got it. There's Charles Davis with us, Fox Sports, NFL Network, draft analyst. Good stuff there. In a dark alley with Christian Westerman. How about that? It's a good description. Good stuff there. On the other side, so we have the Zach LaVine dunk craze from the weekend. We're going to show you if you missed any of that. A few other things on my mind in the world of sports. Sports360AZ.com, that is our website. We have content there that's Arizona-centric, things that we see. We are the Sprouts and Whole Foods in a world of Walmart, as I like to put it. And we just go a little different. Eric and Jared were down in Tucson on Friday. Spent some time with Greg Byrne. They were at the first day of U of A football practice. That's right. Spring football workouts already going on at the U of A. We have our three-time-a-week football show on Fox Sports Arizona. It airs Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights. And, of course, content not just football-related around the state, too, at sports360az.com. Did you see the dunk contest, Eric?
I did.
What'd you think? Has it worn itself out?
No.
See,
I think it sort of revitalized itself this
year. I agree with you. There's always, I shouldn't say always, in the last half dozen, 8 years, there's been this cry of the dunk contest is just lame. We don't want to see it. Enough of it. So we have some video from the dunk contest the other night, where Zach LaVine went out and did his thing. And the crazy thing about Zach LaVine and some of the moves that he made out there on the court with his dunks was he still should be in college. Do we have any of that? We have the video rolling in here?
We're efforting. We haven't.
Efforting. Okay. He should still be at UCLA. So, yeah, I mean, when you do those sorts of things, ow. High school kid. Just a couple of years ago.
This video that I pulled is all of Aaron Gordon's and LaVine's dunks. So for the next few minutes, if you're watching on the stream, just sit back and enjoy the beauty and the creativity that these guys displayed on Saturday night.
Now, jumping over a mascot, okay, is that enough to keep me? I'd rather just see the pure athleticism where you're flying high and you're taking off right below the free throw line. He still could have made that from even a few feet back. That's what we love seeing. And look, this is not something for, this is something for 18, 20s, 30s. If you're in your 40s, you're in your 50s or 60s, you've seen these through the years and you'll go back to, well, Michael Jordan did it better when Jordan did the contest. Yeah, I get it. But you throw the slam dunk competition out there like this when you have some dunkers that are willing to get after it. How will you not sit there and watch that? This is eye candy all day long.
This is a pretty insane dunk right there. I mean, the mascot is like twirling around on one of those little hover things. And it's...
Ooh. No, that's good. Guy should still be in college. If he were still at UCLA... UCLA looked very ordinary last night, I thought. You can dive out of that now, but they looked very ordinary, I thought, last night. Put him on the floor. And then Russell Westbrook ends up being the MVP, a former UCLA guy. The All-Star Weekend, they talked about how if there was this one-on-one game of legends, I'm not sure I want to see Larry Bird compete against Dr. J. I don't think I want to see that. I don't think I want to see... I mean, a lot of these guys would probably try to just get in shape for that event, and you'd be worried they'd clutch over and grab their chest or grab their hamstring or tear something. I don't want to see Dominique try to be a part of the Legends Dunk Contest. What are they going to do? Lower it down to 8 feet? You know, the 7 feet? Because he can't jump anymore. I don't want to see Charles in a dunk contest because that wasn't what Charles did. Charles just threw guys around with his body. So rather than trying to find a way to get the legends to come back, the Hall of Famers to come back and play, what's Steve Nash going to show me on a basketball court now? That's going to be hard to watch, probably. I don't think he's been working out. I don't need to see Kevin Johnson on a court to wax poetically and reminisce about what were once great times with Kevin, who, by the way, made the Hall of Fame finalist list again. Don't know if he's going to make it in or not, but his name is out there from the weekend. All-Star Weekend, they do it right, other than I tried to watch the game, what do they call it on Friday night?
The Rising Stars.
No, Rising Stars was fine. It was the game before.
Skills Challenge?
They had the celebrities. The celebrity
game. Oh, yeah, I don't watch that.
That was bad.
I don't. Outside the dunk contest, I really don't care for much.
It's like I wanted to see how Devin Booker did.
He did very well.
And Devin Booker did very well. Quitted himself quite nicely. Okay, but I really don't care what Kevin Hart does on a basketball court. I don't care. And we're doing something this week on the stream and also on the TV show and on the website. I went out to LA a couple weeks ago for the movie Race that is coming out. It's the story of Jesse Owens. Jesse Owens lived his final years right here in Phoenix. I sat and interviewed Jesse Owens' two daughters. And I interviewed the star of the movie Race, who plays Jesse Owens, who played in the game. And I had somebody tell me that that movie was all funded through Canadian dollars. So guess what? When I'm watching this Stars game on Friday night, it's like, yeah, and this person's with the movie Race, and this person's with the movie Race. And it kind of hit me. Okay, this is all funded by the movie Race. I got it. It's a PR thing. The movie's pretty good. It's a little long, but it was fine. It was fine. The thing about what makes the baseball All-Star game so good for me is there is still the strategy involved. Like last night, they scored 196 points. There was no strategy other than let's get 200. There's no defense. 196 to 170-something, that doesn't work. And it may work for the rating. I haven't seen the number yet today. But I'd much rather see a pitcher come into the All-Star game and just blow guys away on 9 pitches and walk off the mound. I'm Aroldis Chapman. I am going to blow you away in 9 pitches, and I'm going to walk off the mound because I am an all-star.
And it's personal to the baseball all-stars. They want to win. I mean, there's supposedly the incentive for the postseason. But they go there for the atmosphere, sure. But they also go there to compete.
Sure.
Because there are bragging rights. There are no bragging rights in the Pro Bowl. No one cares if the AFC or the NFC wins. No one cares if the East or the West
wins
the NBA
like the
All-Star
most?
Game. It's got to be the baseball All-Star game. And of all the big sports, baseball is probably my least favorite. So,
what about the NHL? I mean, I feel like we're underserving the NHL here.
It's entertaining.
I
don't watch a lot of it, but it is entertaining because those guys, I mean, NHL players are such great athletes. Everyone talks about how the NBA is loaded with great athletes, which they are. But when you consider what NHL players do in full pads on ice with skates, it's unbelievable. It's unreal. Well, they're so skilled.
Here's the thing on that. When I'm watching last night's All-Star game, there were a lot of plays where guys weren't running. They were standing. Okay? They're not putting it out full force.
It's a display. That's all it is.
Right. You're models. In hockey, you're skating your tail off. You are dripping buckets of sweat. You are out there laying it all out. And in baseball, it's the same way. I don't see a guy not run out a ground ball in the baseball All-Star game. When I see a home run hit in the baseball All-Star game, that's a guy hitting a home run off of an All-Star pitcher. That's pretty dang impressive.
Yeah, when managers do double switches in an All-Star game.
But in the Pro Bowl, I see guys playing touch and barely touch and standing around, okay? That doesn't excite me. That doesn't interest me. When I see the NBA All-Star game, it's nice to see all the big names. Like watching Kobe, how do you not get a little – I didn't get choked up. I just got a little shiver when he walked off the court because that's the end of an era. We're no longer going to see him, and he deserved to have his night.
As did Magic Johnson when he played in his final All-Star game.
Absolutely. When he did the fall away when he stepped back into the fallaway three.
Yeah, that's an iconic moment.
Sure,
one of Magic's several iconic moments.
Sure it is. But. Sure it is. And when LeBron has his final game, I don't know if I'm going to get, like when Carmelo has his final game, it's fine. It's the fact he plays in New York, they'll make a big deal out of it because he's not that good, in my opinion. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Eric has a terrific story that he worked on over the weekend involving Eddie House. Remember Casa? Eddie House has a son on the high school level that's only a freshman who's getting it done, and there's video of him. You can check it out. It's a cool story that Eric did.
Plays a lot like his dad. There's the hint.
shoot.
Yep.
But it's up on the website at sports360az.com. Also, the guys were at Tucson for spring football and some new buildings down at U of A, and there'll be things popping up throughout the week. Appreciate you being with us.